Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, October 23rd, 2017. And by now, just about all of you, or almost all of you, know that yesterday the Green Bay Packers fell to the New Orleans Saints 26-17 in the first career start for Brett Hundley. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Here to join me, as always, is fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein. And Tom, it was a rainy, ugly, windy day. And that's kind of the way it went for the Packers, too. What jumps out to you about this game, first and foremost?
Well, I guess number one was that Brett Hundley was not ready for prime time. He just wasn't very good. He didn't make a lot happen. I never would have thought that Aaron Jones was going to have as good a game as he did and then them still lose. Because I thought if they could run the ball, that would take a ton of pressure off Hundley and allow him to, you know, move the ball. But the defense didn't play very well. Hundley didn't play very well. I don't know about the game plan. It's kind of hard to tell. But this is a game that was lost in the second half, and they just had no staying power. And it was, you know, it was Aaron Jones or nothing. Pretty much all day.
So let's start at the very end, and you have in your hand right now the transcription from Mike McCarthy's press conference, and he spent a good deal of that press conference basically putting the blame on himself and saying, I need to do better, this is on the head coach, et cetera, et cetera. First of all, are you buying that? And second of all, how much of this is McCarthy being smart and knowing that he needs to prop up, you know, the young quarterback?
Oh, no question. That's a big part of it. I'm reading this quote. I wasn't at his press conference because I was in the locker room, and they have the locker room open at the same time the coach speaks. And he said he was asked about, was Hundley ever comfortable in the pocket? The in-the-pocket stuff, he wasn't comfortable. I think that, frankly, I wasn't comfortable. I was probably calling some things. We have to kind of find our way there. I needed to do a much better job with him in the drop-back passing game. He tried to do a little too much, and we tried to guard against it, but he's competitive. He made some big, big plays with his feet, and, you know, we'll grow from that. So a big part of this job, our job, is trying to read between the lines for Mike McCarthy. Because
yes.
He often speaks in these generalities that you can sometimes assume things and read through it, and other times you can think you understand it, but you don't.
But you don't, yeah, exactly. So give me your take, and then I'll give you mine.
Okay, my take is that he gave Hundley too much latitude at the line of scrimmage, that he built in some run-pass option stuff, that he felt like Hundley tried to do too much. I'm not sure what he meant. I needed to do a much better job with him in the drop-back passing game. Maybe the calls, maybe the options he gave him. He tried to do a little too much. To me, I didn't see him forcing the ball.
No, I didn't either.
And so that tells me he tried to do too much at the line of scrimmage. He tried to call too many changes. Now, you know, the offensive line told me he made the change call, changed the play on Aaron Jones' 46-yard touchdown run. That was early in the game. So he made a really good...
So he made the change to that run,
yes,
that resulted
to
in
that
the touchdown.
Run, okay. Based on the way they set. Maybe he got cocky after that and started changing too many plays. I don't know. I really am interested to watch it again and see. You can sometimes tell when a guy is changing a play at the line of scrimmage. But I don't know what he didn't feel comfortable with him in the pocket. You know, they rolled him out a few times. They ran some read option. It was just really inconsistent all the way around. So I am kind of interested to watch it again.
So his final numbers were 12 of 25 for 87 yards. One interception at the end of the game to Kenny Vaccaro on a bad overthrow, and a passer rating of 39.9. And then when I heard that quote, I kind of interpreted it a different way. I think that your interpretation is probably more accurate, because when you explained it, it made more sense. But the first thing that jumped out to me was him saying that he wasn't comfortable and I wasn't comfortable with the in-the-pocket stuff. And I took that to mean maybe the things that they thought were going to work based on what did well against the scout team in practice did not pan out with the same level of poise or at least maybe calmness once, you know, the bullets started flying and guys were coming at him. And so Hundley wasn't comfortable with action coming at him, and McCarthy wasn't comfortable because he could see that in order to make the types of throws that maybe they saw were going to be there in practice, Hundley couldn't handle that once everything was in his face.
Right.
So that was the way that I took it. And, you know, I was – during the week I talked to a player who was on the team last year, and he said Hundley's always amazing in practice. He said he's never seen Hundley have a terrible practice. Mm-hmm. The guy lights it up all the time. And that's not a bad thing, obviously. You want your guys to play well in practice. But if they're playing that well in practice and then it's not translating to the game, again,
right,
small sample size, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what that's what made me think that. In terms of, you know, the way he looked with blitzers coming at him and being able to escape with his feet, what did you think in that regard there? Because obviously that's a huge asset to Rodgers when he's in there.
Oh, he was outstanding. He broke some tackles. I thought he was sacked a couple times and he got out of it. He ran, you know, he needs to learn how to slide, but he ran for a touchdown on a play where he correctly read the guy was, you know, sort of giving up on the play at the end and decided to take it in for a touchdown. That was really smart. He had a couple of nice runs. But so from that standpoint, buying time, fine. But he showed me the same thing that you and I have talked about, was that every time he breaks the pocket to throw, he can't find anybody, can't pull the trigger, or he just isn't confident doing it. And that's part of being in the pocket. He needs to be in the pocket. I don't know.
The Saints had one sack and three total hits, which I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I would bet my house that's less than Rodgers has been hit in every game this season.
Probably.
With the amount of shots that he's taken. So Hundley did a nice job avoiding it. I agree with you. When he got outside the pocket, it doesn't look right. I don't know if it's his eyes and that, you know, the places that Aaron Rodgers looks when he's outside the pocket are not the same places that Hundley is looking, or if it's just a lack of confidence to make certain throws. But I feel like, you know, the Saints were essentially in a situation where every time Hundley got out of the pocket, they knew that he was either going to run or throw it out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those seem to be the only two options.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know what the Packers have to build off with this from Hundley, or if you almost have to start from scratch again because there was so little to see.
Yeah. Well, my whole take on this and what I wrote this morning was that Aaron Jones is their most valuable player on offense right now. Davante Adams might be their best player. Jordy Nelson might be right there. Randall Cobb, Bennett. But those guys aren't any good without the ball in their hands. And the one guy you can assure that you can get the ball in his hands is Aaron Jones. And I thought they sort of adjusted their run game a little bit for Aaron Jones for the first time. Like, a lot more kind of quick hitters. They had some power plays where he followed pulling guards. He's so quick. Toss plays. He's just so good at reading everything. The one area that they really failed in was the screen game, and I think they need to go back, and they need to make that a staple of their offense with Aaron Jones and start building around him and then gradually work Hundley back into it, because right now I don't see anything you can build on with Hundley and the passing game.
No, I agree. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, like you said, if I told you before the game they'd have 24 carries for 181, an average of 7.5, this is as a team, they'd have two touchdowns and a 46-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
I would think they'd win the game.
And it's not garbage yards.
No.
They got most of this in the first half.
Yeah. And so that to me is alarming, even more so maybe than just watching Hundley, is that they had the best run game they've had in a long time. I thought, when I did a TV hit last night, I thought this might be the best running performance since they had over 200 yards against the Cowboys here a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the game where I think Sam Shields had that concussion, but Lacy and Starks were on fire that game. I thought it was the best since then. Then you look at the passing game, their longest completion was 14 yards. Jordy Nelson has one catch for 13. Davante Adams has two catches for 12. Cobb has two for 15. I mean, they couldn't get the ball to the people they need to get the ball to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know – I don't know where you go from here, and I don't know – if I'm those receivers, it's hard for me to not be really, really frustrated, even though I know it's a situation where I shouldn't be really, really frustrated.
Yeah, they're going to have to be patient. This is going to be a process. And if it's possible that Hundley's not up to the task, that he's just not good enough, I don't know. I don't think we can make that assessment after one game, but we can make the assessment after two starts that Aaron Jones is the real deal. You can say, he's just two games. But if you don't center your offense around a guy who can, in his only two starts of his career, rushes for over 120 yards, I don't know. What are you thinking?
Tom, I'll translate it for you. Drop Ty Montgomery from all your fantasy teams. That's essentially what it means. I mean, I don't know if they're going to do that, but, I mean, look, the production is obvious. 17 for 131 for Jones, 4 carries for 6 yards for Montgomery. Mm-hmm. Just watching them run, it's totally different. Montgomery gets really hunched over and puts two hands around the ball and kind of – he's sort of the intermediate between what we saw from Jamal Williams and what we see from Aaron Jones. There's a little shiftiness for Montgomery, but not a lot. With Jamal Williams, there's no shiftiness right now. And Aaron Jones is what you want, a guy that can make guys miss behind the line of scrimmage, that can jump cut over a gap if he needs to go somewhere else. And I agree with you. You got to build it around him.
And I'm gonna campaign for Devontae Mays as well. I think that's the kind of back the Packers need from now on, or at least that's the back that's going to work with Hundley, that they need to have. They need to alter their run game to fit those two guys, call more plays that fit what those guys do, and work on screen games. I mean, do what Kansas City has done with Kareem Hunt. I mean, he's added a whole nother dimension. They have a lot of talent around him. They got Kelsey. They got
Tyreek Hill.
You know, it's not like they didn't have any talent, but this guy just draws so much attention from everybody else. It takes pressure off all the others. I think I made the point that same thing in Washington with Chris Thompson. He takes a lot of pressure off Kirk Cousins because he's a threat to do something every time he has his hands in the ball. So I think this is really going to be on McCarthy to figure out how to both get Jones, maybe Mays, involved and still build on Hundley. Slowly and surely you're going to have to build Hundley's confidence.
So he's got 2 weeks now before the next game, which would be on Monday night against the Lions here at Lambeau Field. Do you think that 2 weeks off benefits Hundley more because he has, you know, more time to sort of work with these guys or work with the coaches, et cetera? Because I almost think that 2 weeks is a little bit of a detriment in that, I mean, the Lions are going to have 2 weeks to figure out what to do against this guy. And if he's already got limited options to begin with and a defense has 2 weeks to look at him, I just don't know how that can benefit Hundley.
Well, I don't know, but I think the biggest benefit of the bye week is going to be for the offensive line. I think Bakhtiari showed rust today. I thought he wasn't, as reliable as always. Balaga's been working off that ankle injury. Lane Taylor was gone, although I thought McCray did a really good job in the run game.
McCray's a road grader, man. Yeah. He will go out there and just knock you over.
Yeah. No, he had a couple of missed blocks, too. But
sure.
But Linsley was obviously banged up. He wasn't the same. They need to come back and have those guys healthy. And the more healthy they are, the better off Hundley will be. The more time he'll have, the better their run game will be. That's going to be really key, is just get those guys some rest. So that's the best thing that can happen. Hundley, it'll be a wash because Detroit can spend 2 weeks working on him and the Packers can work 2 weeks on Detroit.
Right.
It's the same. But somehow the Packers have to get get Hundley on some kind of rhythm with these receivers and figure out what went wrong.
So two questions. One, we're not even halfway through the season, and isn't it kind of ironic that the only healthy lineman is the oldest one, Jahri Evans?
I know.
The one whose career might have been on its deathbed had he not signed here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's been the steadiest guy in terms of availability week
after
week.
Well, that's his history. I mean, he's played 11 years in New Orleans, and I think I looked it up. He had missed 7 games in 11 years. So that's not too surprising. But, you know, they really need Bakhtiari playing his best. And when they have those two tackles and then Lane Taylor, they're a good line.
Agreed.
And then Hundley's got a little time and then can buy some time. And, you know, it just wasn't a good showing today all the way around.
Second question. Typical bye week is the players are here today, Monday, maybe on Tuesday, but then the coaches usually cut them loose and they all fly out and go and visit their families. Then they come back on usually Sunday afternoon. So they might get 3-4 days to get out of town. Now, I know that McCarthy can't necessarily make these guys stick around, but what do you think are the chances that Nelson, Adams, Cobb, Hundley choose to stick around and throw and catch just because, I mean, it clearly is not where it needs to be right now?
Zero.
So you think these guys are all going to cut out?
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely. I think it's more important for veteran guys like that to get their bodies together. You know, you can do some stuff on, you know, like they do in the off season, but really I don't think there's anything that gets you in tune with each other than playing together in a game setting. You know, practice helps. Practice definitely helps. Practicing in pads helps even more. But them running 9-on-7 Skelly drills or just, you know, running drills without defenders, I don't think that's going to do them any good. I think they're better served if everybody goes home and gets a rest, because injuries have devastated this team.
So anything else you want to talk about on offense before we switch over to defense?
Let's see. I was really surprised, and I know this is self-serving, but I really did think that Allison and Rogers should have played more. I thought as soon as Allison came in, Hundley looked right for him.
Twice
in a row.
One was a drop.
And then Allison dropped one, and they pulled him right after that. But he's got the longest catch of the day, right? 14 yards?
He's tied with Randall Cobb, yeah.
Yeah. So why did they do that? I don't understand that. And then Richard Rogers got pulled as soon as there was some kind of mix-up on the play, and he was blocking downfield.
Yeah.
And then they benched him after that. So I don't really understand that.
No Trevor Davis, no Janice.
It's like, you know, put one guy who's familiar with him, because it was obvious that he felt comfortable with Allison because he threw it to him the first time he was out on the field. That's the only other thing I got.
All right, so let's move on to the defense, and let's start at the beginning here. And the first two drives for the Saints end in interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, the ball is moving downfield, and Breeze throws sort of up the middle, and Demaryius Randall has good position on a poorly thrown ball against Brandon Coleman, and he snags it in the end zone for a touchback. One possession later, Breeze takes another shot, this time down the right sideline to Michael Thomas. Devon House is in coverage, and he makes a nice play to pick that one off inside the red zone. So two plays, two turnovers, combined with the big run from Aaron Jones to start, and within the first 15 minutes of real time, this had gone about as well as the Packers could have possibly hoped for.
Right.
And then what happened?
Well, except for the fact that they didn't capitalize on either of those turnovers. Both those interceptions were gifts. I mean, the first one, Randall is the luckiest guy on earth. That, you know, I'll give him credit. He caught it. It was an underthrown ball. He had good coverage. But, you know, that's a bad ball that Breeze threw. The one to House was underthrown too, but House made a hell of a catch.
Yes.
I got to give him a lot of credit for that. That was a really nice interception, even if it was underthrown a little bit.
And I just want to make one quick point. You know, you mentioned that it's a gift to Randall, and I tweeted something to that effect during the game, and people are jumping all over me. And I just want to make one thing clear. It can still be a gift of an interception, even if the guy plays good coverage. Those two things do not have to be independent of each other. I can cover Tom like a blanket down the field, and that doesn't mean every interception is an amazing interception. If the guy throws it right to me, it's still a gift. It just means that I was in the right spot to accept that gift.
Right.
And so we're not saying that Randall was in poor coverage and the ball just went to him. We're saying that he had good coverage on the play and the ball was thrown so poorly that he didn't have to do anything except turn around and it hit him in the hands.
Yeah, what did Vaccaro have to do on that last touchdown except run a deep route and Hundley hit him right, you know, in the hands.
Exactly.
So, you know, yeah, you have to make the interception and God bless you for that, but come on, let's not – these aren't guys jumping routes or, you know
– making diving plays along the sideline, toe drags, all that kind of stuff. And so basically from there, I mean, essentially all game the Saints were able to move the ball. Even on those two drives, they moved the ball. And so what they did early was they went with their running game for the most part with Ingram and Kamara. Those two guys combined for – 217 in the game, and I think it was 123 in the first half total yards. With Ingram, it was your between-the-tackle stuff, and with Kamara, they did a lot of swing passes, a lot of things to get him out on the edge. What did you make of sort of the first half in terms of the way that New Orleans attacked this defense and the way the defense responded?
Well, as always, New Orleans always seems to be a step ahead of the Packers' defense. For whatever reason, Sean Payton has Dom Capers' number. He just seems to be a step ahead of Capers on all of these plays and in his scheme, game planning. I thought, though, after three quarters, they've given up 16 points. That's game-winning football
That's
in my
book.
Two interceptions, and you've only given up 16 points. You're down 16-14. Fine. The underlying problem there was that they had been on the field too long and they'd given up too many yards. So by the time they got to the fourth quarter, they were tired. They were letting Breeze get into a rhythm. And they had nothing left in the fourth quarter to really put up much of a resistance. So at the same time that they did well in giving up 16, there were signs that they were going to start falling apart.
So I essentially wrote about what the Saints did to the Packers' defense, and I talked to a bunch of different guys in the locker room, and there were a couple factors that everybody cited. One was that early in the game with New Orleans rolling so many different personnel groupings in there, that there were some massive communication issues. You saw plays where – I mean, I remember one play in particular where Josh Jones runs off the field. Demaryius Randall runs off the field. And I think it was Marwin Evans took a step onto the field, then came back. Then Quentin Dial ran onto the field. And it was a mess. And McCarthy eventually had to call the timeout. Mm-hmm. And so the reason for all this was because New Orleans was going through all these different personnel groupings. They would go five wide receivers. They would go with an extra offensive lineman. They'd bring in a fullback. They'd go bunch receivers on one side and one on the other. And it was just all this mix and matching that essentially forced, you know, the Packers to have to rotate their guys. And they couldn't do it quickly enough. So I want to read this quote from Blake Martinez because he was the most honest of it. And eventually it led to a touchdown. When Ingram had his 12-yard run, there were only 10 Packers defenders on the field. It's inexcusable. Mm-hmm. And here's the quote from Martinez. They're an extremely fast offense. Drew Brees is obviously a great quarterback. He's able to kind of get them in and out, use their personnel in a smart way. And yeah, it was difficult out there. I think overall we did well, but there were some times where we were kind of mixed up. Mm-hmm. And that's about as honest as a guy is going to get in terms of saying there were some issues. Now, how much of that, if any, do you pin on the fact that the guy that they spent all offseason with the communication helmet, Morgan Burnett, is not out there? Mm-hmm. Do you think that matters now that Clinton Dix is a new person handling the communication?
I do. And someone, when they had 10 guys on there, should have called timeout. I don't care if you're running out of timeouts, whatever. When you're at the 12-yard line and you only got 10 guys on the field and you're in a close game, call timeout. Someone call timeout.
My guess is nobody noticed.
How could that be? Clinton Dix, to me, it was a missing corner, I think, because Bryce went up and covered a wide receiver, and Clinton Dix was in the back. And how does Clinton Dix should know that there's a DB missing, if it was a DB. If it's not, someone standing next to you, you know this guy's supposed to be there. Right. He's not there. Call a freaking timeout. What? I don't understand that at all. How do you, if there's a, you know who's supposed to be next to you, call it. And, you know, yeah, so the crowd boos you for taking a timeout. It's better than giving up a touchdown. I don't understand that. But they miss Burnett in the worst way that way. Burnett, I think, would have called a timeout. Yeah, he's indispensable from that standpoint. And Clinton Dix is just not cutting it. Let's face it. He's just not playing well at all.
Neither is Bryce, honestly. I mean, they've got some issues back there because in terms of the amount of bodies that they dedicated to the safety position on their 53-man roster, they had five safeties this year and seven corners for a total of 12. Last year it was six safeties because they started with Banjo, right, before he got released. I mean, Burnett is the only one right now that I think you can honestly rely on because Clinton Dix insists that he's not hurt. The Packers insist that he's not hurt. And if he's not hurt, if that's really the truth, then he has either regressed significantly or there's something going wrong in terms of his understanding of what needs to happen back there with angles and things like that because he looks like a mess. And then Bryce, I thought, played better today, but he still shows liabilities, whether it's coverage or tackling.
Clinton Dix looks hesitant. He looks slow. He looks passive. You know, there were a couple plays where he breaks on the ball and he breaks the pass up or he has an interception. He made a really nice play in the end zone breaking up a pass.
Yes, he did.
But then you don't see that again. I mean, that was like only the only time I saw him make a really good break. I also saw it. Clinton Dix was, to his credit, he was pointing to Josh Jones. This is your guy. This is your guy, Kobe Fleener. And Josh Jones is looking at him and just stands there and doesn't go and cover the guy. And Clinton Dix told him to go cover. So I don't know what's, you know, you're dealing with rookies. Kevin King had a bad game. Kevin King looked like a rookie, like the game you kind of been waiting for him to have. But Burnett kind of cleans some of that stuff up. He's not the cure-all for everything. But I wonder if Clinton Dix doesn't play the same when Burnett's in the game. Like, there's just something about having Burnett there gives him a little bit more comfort.
No, I think that's definitely true. But I also think that he wasn't playing great when Burnett was healthy either.
No, that's true,
too. I didn't think he played that well against Atlanta when Burnett got hurt, and I didn't think he played that well against the Seahawks in the first game. But no, I think that's certainly part of it in terms of overall comfort. I mean, it has to be. Burnett, to me, is their most valuable defensive player. I know Mike Daniels might be a better player, and I know Clay Matthews and Nick Perry can potentially be more impactful because of their ability to sack the quarterback, generate fumbles, things like that. But in terms of a guy that can play in multiple spots, a guy that can call the defense, a guy that, as you and Bob both told me, had significant issues learning this defense early in his career and has since become perhaps the most assignment-reliable guy that they have, that's a huge loss, and I don't know when he's coming back. It's a hamstring, and he hasn't even practiced at all. We haven't even seen him, essentially. You know, no practicing at all the last 2 weeks. I don't really know.
My only caveat to what you said is that one of the guys who's coming close to being as important to him as the defense is Kenny Clark.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Kenny Clark blocks an extra point that could have been the difference in the game.
Yes.
It was the difference in the game for a while. And you know, when it looked like that, it looked like it could hold, you know, that the Packers might end up – it could wind up being the difference. And Clark, I got to look at his stats, but he's really become one of the best players they have on defense.
He's so athletic.
Yeah, but they're not getting enough – around him. Martinez is playing really well. Kenny Clark had five tackles, quarterback hit, and a blocks extra point. Not bad.
So I asked Kenny Clark about the extra point, and the reason it's particularly impressive to me is because in any football game, whether it's the Packers or otherwise, we've seen examples of block kicks where it's pure athleticism. We've seen Bobby Wagner jump over guys mm-hmm. and block kicks. And so when Kenny was asked about it, he said not that it was the result of, you know, him just rocketing off the line of scrimmage. He said that based on what he knew of the scouting report, of the way that they block it, that he knew there was going to be a crease there, and he got through it. And mm-hmm. to me, that's impressive that a young kid cares enough about a lowly extra point to want to pay attention to the scouting report there.
Sure.
Another factor about what happened to this defense is Kenny Clark said that essentially because they were able to run the ball, they being the Saints, so well in the first half, and they had already, you know, gone over 100 between those two guys by halftime, that it set up play action to the point where the Packers were essentially screwed with a guy like Breeze. He said that it got to the point where they had no idea if it was run or pass mm-hmm. at all, and they tore him apart. And that with coupled with third downs. The Saints were 8 of 15 on third down, including 4 of 7 in the second half, mm-hmm. including 3 of 3 in the fourth quarter. The Saints scored on four of their last five possessions in the game, and the fifth possession was the kneel down to run out the clock. So they scored on every single possession of the second half.
Amazing. Yeah.
Now, were they touchdowns? No. There were, what, 3 field goals for Lutz, I think it was? But still, I mean, it was a complete flip-flop in the second half. So when you look at these corners now, and King has the rookie game, and House, I thought, played pretty well, but even he said that he was less than 90% coming into this game. Mm-hmm. Demarius Randall, I thought, was, you know, here and there, up and down. But, I mean, they gave up 141 to Ginn. They gave up 82 to Michael Thomas. I feel like it's been the same story since in my 2 years here and the couple years before I got here. Can the secondary do anything to save these games?
I don't know. You know, on paper, they've got talent. I know that injuries have hurt the secondary quite a bit. But in a game like this, I don't know what to think about it. Because on the one hand, they did hold to field goals on two very important drives in the third and fourth quarter. But then on the other hand, you know, then you see, what was it, third and 18 or something, and they throw that little screen or whatever it was, and they get the first down on that.
So they can, like I said, they converted 8 of 15 on third down, and 3 of those were third and 9 or longer, including a third and 17, which you were referencing to Ginn, where he out, and that's another play where Clinton Dix looks like he can't run or he's in quicksand.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm trying to look and see if they scored on that drive. On that third and long drive. Can't find it here. I think it was in the third quarter.
I got it. That ended with a 28-yard field goal. It was the very first play of the drive. Breeze short left to Ted. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're talking about the third and 17?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Ginn's 47-yard.
No, okay. Third and, when the heck was that? Maybe that was in the second quarter. Whatever it was bad. And you can't give up stuff like that. Anyway.
Oh, I found it. It ended in a punt.
Oh, it did end in a punt.
Yes.
Okay. Last time. That was the end of the first half.
Yeah. But how much of that is the pass rush, too? I mean, Clay Matthews was not able to get much of anything today. Breeze gets the ball out of there quick.
Yeah, Breeze doesn't get sacked a lot. I don't know how much you can put on the pass rush.
Okay.
It was okay. It wasn't great. Yeah, they got a couple hits on him. Breeze is going to get rid of it. I don't know. I just thought it was they just gave up too much stuff underneath, and maybe they played a little too much zone. I'm going to have to go back and look because it's kind of a blur to me. With 485 yards, I can't really process consistencies, you know, what it was that New Orleans was doing so well against them. But I do know that there were a lot of people who underperformed.
So I don't know if there's anything else in particular from this game you want to talk about, but what about just the NFC North at this point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Vikings are 5-2 after they beat the Ravens, I think it was,
yep.
on Sunday. The Bears get a huge win over the Panthers, and they're up to 3-4 to the point where you can't write them out of at least a little bit of the conversation. Mm-hmm. The Lions were on bye this past week, and they're 3-3, and the Packers are now in second place at 4-3. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about this race, you know, now having seen everybody in person except Detroit?
Well, it's still open. Minnesota, to me, is the favorite, but Minnesota's had a bunch of games at home. I think they're getting ready to go on an extended road trip.
I'll take a look at that now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think they played four games at home, something like that. Detroit will have something to say about this before it's all over. The Packers, they got to win the Detroit game. That's a huge game coming up in 2 weeks.
If they don't win that and drop to .500?
I don't know. Then they're in trouble because they go to Carolina. What do they do after Detroit?
Good question. Let me see.
I should know that.
Oh, no, we don't have to know the schedule. So they've got the Lions, then they go at Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Home against the Ravens at the Steelers.
That game at Chicago is really
a tough game.
Looking tough. Yeah. They would be in trouble if they lost that Detroit game. They need to win those next two games.
The Vikings have five of their next six on the road.
Yeah.
So they go at Cleveland, at Washington, home against the Chargers, at Detroit, at Atlanta, at Carolina. That's a brutal stretch.
So that's a tough schedule for them. We'll see how this thing plays out. It's not over for anybody right now. Packers just have to worry about themselves, and they got to worry about Hundley, and they got to get him ready to play and get him figure out what they want to be on offense and get some consistency. That's it. And get healthy.
That's all I got to say about this one.
Yeah, not much else. We said a lot. I don't know if we solved any of their issues, but.
Well, world peace. We got that settled everything.
Yeah, well, more than anything. We got a bye week.
Yes. This is the only podcast of the week. You're not getting anything else.
Yeah, you guys need to take a break, too. Based on the anger in the blog today, I could tell a lot of people could use a bye week.
So the Packers have some media availability later today. McCarthy, the locker room, and the assistant coaches. And then after that, there's nothing for the rest of the week. We'll still have coverage online, so be sure to check out some stories that will roll out in the next few days. But there won't be any podcast for the rest of this week. And then we'll probably get back into it middle of next week, our typical Wednesday, as we get ready for Monday Night Football against the Detroit Lions. So no live blog. They get a break from that.
Yep.
They get to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be back against the Lions on that Monday night.
We'll all rake our leaves and meet back here in 2 weeks.
All right. Sounds good. So until then, we will talk to you guys soon.